This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 214 for Wednesday, November 9th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we're into. We talk about everything from movies, television, books, apps, websites, you name it. We're into it. We'll let you know. Joining me tonight is none other than Brock Advola of Biggest Fan Podcast. Welcome, sir.
Hey, it's a time warp. I wish I could go back in time. But you just heard me. You just heard me before off the sugar high, and now I'm off of an alcohol high or downer. There's no high to alcohol, really.
A lot of folks drinking today.
Yeah. Have you ever had, I'm just immediately going to derail it. Have you ever had, which again, this is insane, but like Red Bull and vodka?
No,
like together,
I've heard that it's a thing,
downer. Yeah.
But I can't even get Red Bull past my nose.
Oh, geez. Really?
I can't stand the smell of it. I can tell how sweet it is. Like I can just, it smells syrupy, even just from someone next to me having it.
Yeah.
So I've never ventured. It's not, closest thing I would get would be, I'm not even sure because I'm not a big vodka guy. I like a vodka martini, but I like my stuff like bitter or strong. So maybe like a vodka orange or vodka cranberry would probably be the closest I would get to like a really sugary vodka drink.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah, I'll have a rum and coke or a rye and ginger. And so pop is sweet, like the soda, as you call it, below the border. is sweet. Actually, you know, I feel like Lou Page, who's often on the show, might defend me. I think they call it pop in Maine.
They call it pop in the Midwest.
Yeah,
technically.
Okay.
I mean, it's starting to bleed as our culture starts to all just be splashed together. Mm. But pop was definitely what my father would have called it in Illinois, Minnesota, you know, and those are border states. So, you know,
yeah.
I mean, Illinois is not, but you know, Minnesota and Wisconsin and that sort of thing. So yeah, pop is a very Midwestern northerner thing that comes up because essentially it's just soda pop. And then the South decided to call it soda.
Right.
Which if you really want to know the truth, the South honestly probably just calls it Coke and most of the time you would go, your server shows up and they're like, what would you like to drink? And they're like, I'll have a Coke. And they're like, we have Pepsi. Is that okay? And then most of them are like, no, I hate Pepsi, and they wrench on themselves, but I actually like Pepsi. So it's like, yeah, that's fine. But they just default, you know,
right.
It's like, hand me a Kleenex, but that's the brand. It's actually face tissue. So,
yeah.
But nobody
yeah.
wants to say that. So,
And that's the brand recognition and all that kind of stuff. So,
right.
Do you have like a favorite, like a lighter soda, like a 7-Up or a Sprite, or do you have anything? Like not a cola, but not the dark ones.
Yeah, Sprite and 7-Up. Sprite's still fairly strong. 7-Up's now become almost a novelty drink. The way, I don't know if you know about Squirt, but sometimes you can find Squirt. Some, it's not nearly as available as like ginger ale and Dr. Pepper are still probably the most mainstream of the like quote unquote side ones that aren't clearly Sprite or clearly Coke or a diet version of those. But you know, we still have various root beers and Sunkiss or Fanta, because it's owned by Coke, is really out there, but you can still find Sunkiss for the most part. But yeah, just, you know, your classic orange soda, ginger ale, cola, and then lemon lime seltzery drinks are just pretty standard across the board.
Right on. The reason I ask is because a lot of the microbrews around Nova Scotia are getting into brewing their own soda.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because they're making their presence known at a bunch of trade shows, and the trade shows are not always licensed. So
they
have to offer something, right? You can go up and talk to them about their beer, but they may not be serving it depending on where you are. Case in point, when I was at Halcon this past weekend, Garrison Brewing was there, and they were selling, I think it was only $2, a raspberry soda. And It was bright green because the Halcon, their colors are like bright green and purple. So it was very aptly branded, and it was really good. And I'm not a big pop guy. Like, I mean, like I said, I'll have a rum and Coke, you know, I'll have a mixed drink, but I'm not usually going to sit down and have like a giant glass of Coke, maybe with pizza. You know, it's like one of those birthday party things, you know, pizza, pop and birthday cake. But I really enjoyed this raspberry soda, and it wasn't overpowering. It's a little bit weird sitting there with this like neon green drink, you know, that you're ingesting. It's like, this can't be good for me.
Your mouth is just glowing in the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. But I really enjoy their beer. So I trust that they probably, you know, if I'm going to buy something like that from a brewery, the chances of them putting more sugar in it than they need are pretty low, would be my guess. I don't know. I know that you have to put a lot of sugar in a soda. Like, I get that. But I don't think it would have been like, you know, all the sugar just because it's cheaper for us to add sugar than it is for us to make it taste good. Like that kind of a mentality. I think that it would be more of a, well, they're a craft brewery. They're probably going to try to make something that tastes good first and then kind of bring it up to the sweetness that they like. I believe they also make a root beer. And I have not yet tried it. So I'm going to be on the hunt for it. Because it's cool to do stuff like that. Because I like to buy beer for my dad for Christmas and stocking stuffer, that kind of thing. But not all of my friends drink. And if I have people over the holidays, it's nice to have something that's cool and local and good, but not alcoholic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I don't really have any people that specifically don't drink around, but it is kind of nice to have. We had for Halloween, we had a little shindig, and we made basically crock pot cider, and then like put, you know, just the whiskey to the side so you can add a little nip to it. But yeah, it was, I mean, like, you know, certain stuff is really fun certain times of year, seasonal things. And I'm actually a root beer fan, so I actually like a lot of the craft root beers that are out there. It seems like there's a new like surge of different like novelty sodas and bottles. Like, they're, you know, I feel like for a brief period, at least in the United States, all, you know, when we had soda shops, when we had like sort of the more pharmacy tied to the diner aspect of Americana, there was a lot more creativity with that stuff, and that you would get like the vanilla Coke, but they pour the vanilla in, and then it just all became mainstream. Well, now I think a lot of places are starting to put out like, you know, like different versions of orange cream and root beer ones and sarsaparillas and then grape sodas and a lot of different variety. One of my favorites is called Dang, D-A-N-G, and particularly their butterscotch root beer, because I actually like root beer and I like butterscotch. And it's just like, butterscotch is just one of those flavors. And I wish I'd been able to talk about it for Canny of the Day. But like, butterscotch is one of those flavors that I like, but it like has this just perfect amount of butterscotch to buttery flavor to smoothness before it's either crappy or overpowering or whatever. And so they just hint it just enough with the root beer, that it kind of pops, but not in a like, oh my God, you know, like I'm taking three sips and then putting this down. So it's very smooth. And the root beer, this root beer, I think probably favors more of, man, I could do like 4 hours on root beer. I love root beer. more of the sort of root beer where you're used to it being like there, you know, like did you ever have the root beer candies that are like barrel shaped or whatever? You know how it kind of has that, like, it has that root beer flavor, but there's this kind of like high, I would call it high sweetness factor to it, where it's not as, the root beer flavor is not like super robust as much as it's sort of like acute and kind of sweet and kind of, and that mixed with the carbonation and then the butterscotch to smooth it out, to mellow it out, the way most root beers I like are, worked really well. So, yeah, I dig that stuff. That'd be fun to drink, like, do a little green glowy drink. Walk around with your glow.
Yeah, it was fun. That's funny. Yeah, it was a good time. Actually, the whole con was fantastic. While we're talking about HellCon, I had an opportunity to meet a lot of readers and artists, and it never ceases to amaze me in a very humbling way that many of the people that buy my book at a convention have got no idea who I am.
Oh, cool.
It, like, they kind of pick it up and flip through it for, like, I don't know, a minute, and then they end up buying one. And it's just like, it's kind of crazy to me, you know, that people do that. Mm-hmm. And so that one of the reasons why I like to take the time to do a sketch in it for people and talk to them for a few minutes while I'm there. I have to give a big shout out to my friend Mike O'Day, Mike O'Dandy in the chat, because he was a really big help this weekend. So this is the first time really ever that I've had a dedicated person at the table when I'm doing sales. I've been a guest at a con and I've had someone help me out there before, but never when I've just been like really responsible for like earning my own keep while I'm at the convention.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really cool to be able to have a 3-person conversation while I'm sketching in the book. Because like if I start to get focused, I'm trying to get the drawing finished, then I might not be saying too much. Mike would be talking, you know, to the person that's waiting for the sketch. We'd all talk about, I don't know, Lord of the Rings or Supergirl or, you know, it's a Comic-Con. Like, you talk about whatever, you know, because the person in front of you, chances of them being dressed up or at least wearing a nerdy t-shirt are pretty high.
Yeah.
one of the guys I see a lot of times at conventions, his name is Joe, and he was wearing like a Green Lantern t-shirt, a Mario hat. I think he had a Spider-Man hoodie on. he was just all over the place. He was like, I couldn't decide. So he's not cosplaying. He's just nerding out. And it was awesome because of course everything is like a bright primary color, right? So he looks amazing.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So I had a fun chat with him. He picked up, actually picked up one of my, Luigi prints, which was cool. But yeah, the cool thing with having someone at the table, which I'd never thought of, before, was how much more I'm able to do. So while I'm drawing in a book, Mike was able to sell someone a print or, you know, ring in the next book so that I'm not dealing with interacting with the cash and ringing people through and tracking it on the iPad and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was able to do a lot more and it was a huge help. And I mean, they gave me 2 passes for the table. So Mike got to attend the con so he got to wander around and he bought some cool books and prints and stuff for himself. And he's a big Overwatch player. So there was a bunch of art and stuff around for that. I met this one artist, Drake. Man, his stuff is fantastic. He was another vendor. Another vendor, Rob, was there, and he was really cool. Actually, I've got his card here. Hold on. He is from Molten Ink Studios. Molten Ink Rob is him. Molten Ink, I-N-K, like the ink pen. On Twitter. Actually, it looks like that's kind of everything across the social media. I don't remember Rob's last name, but I met like 1,000 people this weekend.
Dozens, man.
Yeah, dozens and dozens and dozens. There was a lot of really cool people. I think my big takeaway from the con this year was meeting the young artists that were out to either listen to a panel that I was doing, moderating, or people that came by the table that just wanted to kind of say hi and see what was up. I met a young lady, and her name was Brianna. And she actually, after speaking with her about, you know, her like creating and encouraging her to keep on doing her stuff and a little bit about my work and what I do, she asked for a hug and a selfie. And she ended up making this really sweet Instagram post saying about how nice it was to meet me and how inspired, you know, she was after talking with me. And that's the kind of thing that I can't say how cool it feels to finally be in a position artistically to be able to meet people that are in their, you know, younger artistic years and looking for advice and asking for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And being like, it's so funny that they're so blown away by me just giving them advice at the table. It's like, of course I'm going to talk to you about stuff. I mean, if you're polite, and I mean, everybody was, like there'd be no reason why would I say no, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but it was so flattering that people are able to get that kind of stuff out of the convention. And to everybody that did come up and ask me about book 2, yes, I am working on a plan for book two. I have to finish Piper's book first. Then I will move on to Starcross Volume 2. I'm actually, if you are a patron of my Patreon page for Starcross, shoot me a message and let me know what you want. Because I need to revamp that page. I need to get back into drawing Starcross, and I need to make some new goals for myself personally, but also to kind of bolster the community a little bit. I've been reading some different articles and things about, you know, good practices and things like that. And once Piper's book from is at the printers, there will be a little bit more of a flexible timeline for me to start working a little bit more on my own stuff. We're kind of at a pinch right now to get it done as far as the design side is going. But once I've got that window of like hurry up and wait while the printer does its thing, then I think I'll be able to kind of build a plan for 2017 and try to put out some new comics.
Oh, sweet. That's awesome. Well, that's
yeah, good. No, I'm excited. So, I mean, I'm drawing a lot of inspiration from being at the con as well. I was able to moderate some panels with some people, other artists in the community that are doing really well, Cartoon Conrad, and Luke Conrad from Cartoon Conrad, some of his staff. He runs an animation studio, and Phil Lamar, we all did a panel together.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I was moderating. I wasn't contributing as much, but I was kind of steering the conversation much like I do when I host a podcast. And Phil Lamar is a very nice guy. It was really cool to meet him, very brief, but because he's a busy guy. But, you know, for those of you that don't know, he's the voice of Samurai Jack and Hermes from...
Futurama.
Futurama. I was going to say Simpsons, but I know that's not right. Futurama. Just drawing a brain fart there. And I also did a really cool comics panel with Leonard Kirk, Mike Norton from Battle Pug, and Richard Pace. That was fun. And I would say the highlight, though, was probably the crowdfunding panel, just because that's kind of more up my alley. I was able to contribute a little bit more to the conversation just because of doing the crowdfunding thing with Forge this summer. And I have to give a shout out to Claire C. Marshall, Angelina. She's ALB in Wonderland on YouTube. Ben Temple Smith and Rodney Smith from Watch It Played. Ben Temple Smith is a comic artist. They were all really, really cool, really insightful. And the panel was really balanced. Like everybody had something to say, but everybody wanted to... We all wanted to talk to each other about this stuff as much as we wanted to talk to the audience about it. So it was really cool, and I felt like it was a really round table situation. Because the worst thing about those panels is if you get up and you just, there's four of you who are just talking heads for 45 minutes, and it doesn't really end up being a conversation. But I felt like the audience was able to ask quite a lot. But overall, I had a fantastic time at HellCon, and I have to say that after... guesting a few times, after attending in one capacity or another over the last, I want to say 4 or 5 years, because when it first started, I went just as a patron. They've really kind of come into their own, and it was very well organized from a vendor's point of view, and I can say that because I know that Sam just popped in the chat room. They were really well organized. I really felt like they had things down. It was a very pleasant experience. So big shout out to Sam and to Fran. And who else did I meet? I'm drawing a blank on names. Obviously Jennifer Lam, who's one of the big organizers of the whole thing. And I'm cool. It's cool to see all that kind of stuff kind of come together in Halifax, you know, like starstruck moment was when Gates McFadden walked by my table and said hi. It's just, that was fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, just kind of like, wait a minute, was that? Yeah, that was okay. Nice to see
that's
you.
Sweet,
you know.
You're just trying to keep it contained. You're just kind of like brushing it off your shoulder, just like, psh, nah, no big deal. It's not that fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've had other celebrities come by the table before, and the funny thing is, they never actually stop moving. It's kind of cool. They slow down, but they never actually stop moving forward. It's kind of fun. But no, she seemed like she had a really nice time. And I'm sure. I know it's Faran, Sam. I mispronounced it. I know it's not Fran. Sam is correcting me in the chat room. I think you might have just misheard me. She was correcting me all weekend. It was lovely. I would just be getting ready to go to my panel, and there's Sam at my booth to take me at like quarter to the hour. It's like, yes, I know. I'm getting ready to go. It was very fun. But like I said, to the point of being organized, like every time I turned around when I had to be somewhere, Sam was behind me saying, Joel, you have to be somewhere. I was like, yes. Lead the way. It was fun. So if anybody is ever in Halifax, I would encourage you to check out HalCon. You might want to plan way ahead because they sell out like immediately.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm happy to have had the experience this time around because it's been a long time since I've actually had like a full 3-day weekend vendoring at HalCon. I pop by Strange Adventures usually for a couple of hours, but it's not a big deal. But yeah, it's good. So I guess we can, I mean, I've been talking for an awful long time about kind of off the track stuff, but word of the wise, you and I have both seen Doctor Strange.
Ooh, yeah.
So for the first time, yeah, go ahead.
I'm so happy that usually, and I mean, like, I don't want to like say, you know, that you're planning this. You just know that I will talk ad nauseum about geography so you can fill your slot. But I always feel like late in the month, there's very few times where there's like big releases. So I usually check the feed and it's like, oh, they talked about Doctor Strange. Oh, they talked about this thing. Oh, yeah. But now I'm so pumped that I actually get to weigh in on Doctor Strange right away. I'm really excited. It was great.
Me too. And I don't often get to see these things like the week they come out. Usually I'm a week or two after. Often my sister and I go on like a cheap night. For us, it's a Tuesday night where it's like matinee prices all day. So yeah.
Us too. That's cool.
Yeah. That's always been that way. I think ever since I was 14, Tuesday was always the movie day.
Because the special day. Yeah.
Because weekends were just a gong show. You know, there's too many people. The lines up are too long. And it was a pretty packed theater, even on a Tuesday night around here. I was pretty impressed.
Right. But I actually saw this. Are they doing the thing where the quote unquote midnight release of movies can actually be like 7 o'clock on a Thursday? Because that's how we saw it. We literally saw it 7 o'clock on Thursday, not even remotely close to the midnight showings, which is really weird considering how it's always been like, oh, the midnight releases, it comes out Friday. Do they have any of that stuff there?
Not for Doctor Strange. There might have the only time stuff like that happens is like there might be like a pre-screening, like something that they sell specific tickets for. For like, for example, when I saw the Green Lantern movie years ago, we bought tickets through Strange Adventures, the local comic shop, because there was a special screening, so they had the tickets, and it was just basically to kind of get like that community into the theater together to go see it. Yeah, and then there was like a meetup at a bar next door, stuff like that. We might as well throw it out there now because it's the first time in a while that both myself and my co-host have seen the film, and it's within the first week of release. So, spoiler warning: if you don't want to hear about Doctor Strange opinion spoilers and probably even some movie spoilers, then you should probably just kind of like come back later. We're not going to talk about it for the whole time, but you might want to fast forward ahead or something like that. I can just say straight up, I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun in the movie. I had no idea what to expect. I'm not familiar with the character at all. Have you read the comics? Like, are you a Doctor Strange comic fan?
See, no, and the only Doctor Strange I really have is tertiary elements of him being involved in the Avengers and that sort of thing. So no, Laura's father was a really big comic book guy, and he had like some of the original comics of, you know, Fantastic Four when it was first coming out, like, and you know, comic collections that'd be worth something if they weren't all like destroyed in a basement flood back when he was like in middle school and that sort of thing. But like, he was very excited about Doctor Strange. He says like Doctor Strange has always been that one title that, like, you know, like you read and it was just different from everything else. So I was really excited ahead of time for this to be a thing. And you know, Marvel has great casting and they consistently, I think, bring the best talent while also actually bringing in big names, which is really hard to do. Like, the Netflix series is all about, all those series are a lot more about just the best talent. But for the movies, of course, they want to put, you know, Benedict Cumberbatch, which even when Iron Man, the first one, came out, like, nobody had heard about Benedict Cumberbatch at that point. But, you know, now Benedict Cumberbatch is a big deal, and Chris Pratt at this point is like, you know, a bigger name. And so these guys are like headlining stuff, which is great because they're just so pitch perfect. And I was really excited. I too have gotten into a mold as I age where I really want to avoid all previews. So I tried to avoid a bunch of ones for Doctor Strange, as you know, the clips just start to sort of just give away spectacle stuff. So yeah, a lot of the spectacle wasn't ruined for me by the time I saw it. So a lot of the kaleidoscopic imagery, a lot of the Inception, Chris Nolan-esque elements mm-hmm. of worlds being flipped and changed and stuff was very fresh for me. And I thought it was great. I love the expansion of the Marvel Universe. And like Ant-Man, to me, it brought a new element to what is essentially the skeleton of almost every one of these stories, where, you know, in a lot of cases, it's either arrogance or naivete that gets these heroes into these origins. But regardless, even if we're seeing the same story over and over again, they're doing just enough. And even, and in this case, I think even more so, giving like quite a bit of original and exciting material to look at. It was really enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a little bit of Tony Stark in Doctor Strange. I mean, you don't dislike him, but you don't really like him either at the beginning of the movie. Like, he's a pretty cocky doctor, you know, he's showboating, but not without talent. Like, he's not bluffing. He can really do all the things that he's, you know, paid very well to do, apparently. And I mean, I can identify with the loss of function in his hands from an accident, and like all the kind of motivation and stuff that they put into the character. Because, well, a few years ago, 10 plus years ago now, I broke my drawing hand, like I broke my wrist, and it kind of flashes in front of you, like, oh crap, like what happens if this happened for real? Like, what if I was in a car accident and my arm was severed, or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a physician, like a brain surgeon, and you break all the fingers in your all the bones in your fingers, like, you're FUBAR. Like, not a lot you're going to be able to do for the rest of your career. So just like the anger and the despair and the desperation and all that kind of stuff that a talented actor like Cumberbatch can portray, I felt was really, really good on screen. And it could be because he was doing the American accent. But I really stopped seeing Cumberbatch almost immediately.
Interesting.
You know, like I was on board. Doctor Strange, it's all good. Now, if he was doing the British thing, I probably would have been remembering Sherlock Holmes, or I recently, what's the last thing that I saw him in? I don't remember the name of the film, but he played the British code breaker.
The Imitation Game with Alan Turing. Yeah,
very, very good movie. And really enjoyed him in that. So like, had I, you know, and again, he's playing kind of like a smart ass, kind of an asshole. You know,
oh, he always just plays super smart asshole geniuses.
Right. Like, so there was a bit of that, but I think because of the American accent, it was enough of a disconnect for me from what I've seen him in before. And he was a little bit more social in terms of dealing with, I don't remember her character name, but Rachel McAdams in the film. Love interest and stuff like that. Like, he smiles and he jokes, and like, you know, Sherlock doesn't joke, you know, like, so
yeah,
things,
exactly.
Things are a little bit more, more broad, I think, in that way that I really liked. And then just, I have to dig up the IMDb page cause I'm terrible with actor names. But, the other actors I really enjoyed in it that struck a chord were, Tilda Swinton. I really enjoyed her performance. Although I usually like her in whatever she's in. I find her really cool.
Yeah. She's what's odd about Tilda Swinton to me is she's somebody that, in a lot of ways, to me, Benedict Cumberbatch too, but like, I never lose Tilda Swinton when I see her on screen, but because the character and how she just works, it's not like I'm watching Tilda Swinton, but it's not like a circumstance where I could ever watch a character and just completely, like, the actor just completely goes away. And maybe that's slightly some of my theatrical background, but Tilda Swinton, I'm like, oh, it's Tilda Swinton. But like, she does such a remarkable job with whatever, like, Anthony Hopkins to me is a tremendous actor and he is fantastic, but I'm like, oh my gosh, Anthony Hopkins, like, he's so good. Like, give him the newspaper to read. And that's the same thing with Tilda Swinton. Like, it's really funny when she does wacky, fast talking American characters, all this sort of stuff, because she really has a great range. Mm-hmm. But she's just so unique, and like David Bowie always is very unique looking, and would always stand out very prominently. And I always think it's interesting, you know, people like that. You're like, wow, that person is striking, and yet somehow they get absorbed by their art so much that you know, mm-hmm. it's just they're part of the palette that creates the greater masterpiece. So, yeah, she's really good, which is funny because I don't know if it got as much buzz in Canada, but stateside it was all about them whitewashing that character. And traditionally it is an Asian a character, you know, okay. for, you know, Asian or I'm probably not pan Asian, but you know, like,
oh, like a Tibetan,
sort of character. Yeah. And of course, you know, they bring in a white actress to play that, and they're already getting a lot of guff for, you know, all these different characters. That
you know what? It didn't really faze me. I also really enjoy Benedict Wong. Who played Wong? Mm-hmm. I had a chuckle at that at the end of the credits because I was trying to remember. I knew what he was from, but I was trying to remember his name, of course. And then I was like, "Well, that's stupid. Why couldn't I figure that out?" Yeah, it's kind of silly. But no, I really enjoyed him in Marco Polo, and I enjoy the funnier moments in Marco Polo with him too. Like, he's just so dry. Like, he plays one of the cons.
Oh, he plays Kublai Khan?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
He looks very different without the long hair and the long kind of whiskery goatee and stuff like that. He also is, whether they ham it up for Marco Polo or not, he's thinner now than he was, I think, when they were filming Marco Polo. Or maybe they had him padded up or something like that. But it could also be just like the funny robes that they wear in Marco Polo.
Yeah.
But he struck me as... much different looking physically, but he's got a very distinct voice and a very distinct delivery. And there were some opportunities for some funny moments with Wong and Strange in this movie. The whole theater was howling at some of the library stuff, like the Beyonce jokes and like stuff like that. There was a lot of humor in this, actually. Were you surprised at how many jokes there were?
You know, it's funny. Somebody called it, and I don't remember who it was. Oh, it was my friend Adam. We were talking about it, honestly, like 2 nights ago, and he said they brought in this writer, podcaster, personality, Dan, or was it, maybe not. No, I'm messing up. Dan Harmon, writer, personality behind, I believe, Community. I don't know if that made it as much. Rick and Morty, sort of, he's one of the minds behind that. I believe he was brought in to punch up some of the jokes and humor to it, which is what's interesting, is because, like, there's a dry wit to it. You know, apparently, I think it was, you know, Patton Oswalt has famously, you know, punched up a lot of different scripts over the years. So, like, you know, some of these scripts, you know, they get done, but then they just bring in a joke writer, somebody just to throw in some stuff. And it landed well. Cumberbatch has that right humor. And I will say that, like, he, like you said, it was like the Sherlock amount of, like, dryness, but he still managed to, like twinkle in his eye, smile, to show like human connection as opposed to just his vapidness that he usually shows in these characters. And that was really charming. And the relationship between him and Wong, of course, is really important. And they immediately like looked really great together. And it was hilarious to have the like little drawback moment of Wong with the single lady song and meanwhile, you just have like the Scooby-Doo moment of him ghosting through the library, grabbing things. And like, there was a lot of funness to it, which is great because I thought for an origin film, they got to what I wanted them, what I think most of us needed them to get to faster than most origin films. Because by this point, we've seen, okay, The Downfall and The Pity Party, like, you know, and it was great in the first Iron Man because it's just him slowly being like, okay, I got to build this suit. I got to work my way into making this suit. But like what I didn't even realize until after the movie had happened, and I don't know if you'll even like really, if you realize it either yet, but like pretty much from the moment that, and we're in the spoiler territory pretty firmly here, I'll just say, but from the moment that he for the first time gets the eye of Agamotto and starts to manipulate with the apple. Then the sanctums start to explode. That, to the end, is almost like a seamless stream with tiny moments of breaths. That's like one big climax. Because once you really think about it, he gets pulled into the New York Sanctum. Then he fights with them there. Then he gets pulled elsewhere. Then they come and find him. Then they go, oh, crap, we got to go to Hong Kong. And then, like, that's it. Like, beat after beat after beat. Like, there's a brief moment where he's in the hospital. But even that is just a reaction to him getting hurt in the sanctum, and then as soon as he's done with his astral fight, like, immediately they have to go to Hong Kong. So it's like, that is essentially that, you know, and like that sort of into the frying pan, from the frying pan into the fire and into the greater inferno afterwards, like, rolling drama that I think really propels most of the ending of the whole film, to the point where, like, I also thought the way they step up the magic and the world of how it functions magically was a nice, satisfying, you know, stuff. I thought early on with the rings they kept showing, you know, and then that was just a small tool, and then the astral stuff. And then by the end, you literally have, you know, jumping around and time manipulation and all this sort of stuff. And it's just fascinating to see all of that really compounded into an hour and 55 minutes, which feels in some ways like it just breezes by after that first hour is just like go.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm glad that the second act doesn't really start until the passage of time when he's got a beard and he's been at the sanctuary for a really long time. We don't know how long. And I'm glad they don't really tell you. They just kind of say, well, long enough to grow a really long beard. And for the friend/ex-girlfriend whatever to be angry with him for being MIA for so long, but not so long that, you know, he's still got scars in his hands, and, you know, it's not, I don't think it's years. It doesn't strike me as that long.
No.
In some ways, the passage of time was not clearly communicated, so you're kind of like, did it take him like a month to get this good at magic, or has it been like a little bit longer?
Right, exactly.
There's no change in the seasons when he goes back to New York. It's the same kind of like gray day when he comes back. It's not like it's snowing or anything like that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And most of the time in New York when we first start there is in the evening, so you can't tell what season it is. I like that they got to him training so quickly in the sanctuary, because you get to see some cool effects, and you get to see Tilda Swinton crack some fun jokes and all that kind of stuff. And the one thing that I found a little convoluted was the time stuff. Like, they did a really good job of handling everything, but after a while, I was like, okay, wait, like, it's the same with any movie where they deal with time. You've got this very delicate do-over button, and it's like, if you abuse that, it kind of gets a little bit thick for me. But that's coming into it not knowing, like, what Doctor, like, me, like, in the comics, if Doctor Strange is always messing with time, well, then it makes total sense, right? But I don't know. So I found that was the only thing about that whole climax situation where I'm just kind of like, okay, so he can do it, but he's been told not to. Is he going to listen? Like, that was a little bit complicated. I liked the fight scene where everything was reversing, but the magicians were moving forward through it. So they had to avoid. So instead of having a fight in a city street with regular traffic going by and bystanders, time was reversing. So you had to avoid people on bicycles going backwards, and you had to avoid rocks flying up from where they fell down. Like, that was really cool visually. Like, the special effects in this movie, like, never once did you kind of go, oh, well, that's really cool. Wonder how they did that. It was always like, whoa, watch out for the backwards car. Like, it just...
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Everything felt like really, really, you know... the only time that you realize it's a special effect is when, like you said, the kaleidoscope stuff where, like, buildings start folding in half and changing, like, Lego and stuff like that. You're like, okay, that's where you realize it's a special effect. But the stuff that was practical, like, even... I want to say they might have even used stop motion for the apple. Like, that looked really...
yeah,
really visceral. It could have been CG, but they animated it in a way that made it feel step by step, as opposed to too smooth and too perfect and stuff like that. I enjoyed the fighting. This might be old man of me, but I feel like if you haven't seen this, and I mean if you're listening to this now and you've gotten this far, don't sit where you normally sit when you go to see this. Sit maybe two or three rows back farther. I felt a lot of the fighting, because there's magic going on, so they're doing cool stuff with their hands, and then fireworks are happening, but then they're also punching and hitting and spinning and kicking and doing all that kind of stuff. I found it so hard to follow.
There was a bit in the hand-to-hand that was a bit heavy.
Yeah,
for
heavy
sure.
And fast and quick cuts. And I don't think they really broke the axis anywhere, but like at some points I felt it kind of hard to follow. But at the same time, that might be the intent. Like the intention is not to say this is going to be, you're going to be able to follow every punch. It's more like the Doctor Strange is new. He's overwhelmed. So what you feel is, what the hell just happened? I just got hit twice and I didn't see anything coming. And maybe that's what they're trying to communicate. And if that's the case, well, hey, it worked. But sometimes, being the artist, like I want to see the cool laser thing that he just made in the air, and I don't get to see it because it's too much spinning. And I liked all the, I feel like there's some things where they make the magic weapons with their hands where it's like a disc or a fan, and it looks really cool. I really
like
that.
That is classic. I do imagery wise, and I don't know if I caught it or not, but there's a very, I think his very canon pose is essentially if you take your fingers and you do the like I love you sign, you know, with the two middle fingers curled downwards, but like essentially more of, I think instead of really curling your fingers completely to your palm, bring it more just like a half cock, and then like spreading the fingers between pinky and forefinger wide. And then I've seen a lot of poses like that throughout the comics. And then those rings form around that because it's, again, like his fingers are destroyed, but because he's using magic as a tool, his fingers are functioning highly, but they're also functioning in a way that's conjuring things that he's, you know, projecting or using or manipulating in certain ways, which is really cool. And, I thought it was really funny that it went from a couple of times I didn't realize that they were giving me exposition, which I'm always really impressed by. Like they brought up the relics that every, you know, sorcerer is going to get a relic. And then more, you know, they brought up Mordo's with his boots that let him kind of bounce in the air and move quickly. And then I forget the other weapon he had, but so then it makes perfect sense why eventually the cloak of levitation bonds with him. And, and then the eye of Agamotto, even though it's not really supposed to be, I guess, used by everybody, is very classically Doctor Strange's, like that's his look, is the big cape and then the eye and that sort of thing. And so it was interesting that was a good explanation for those things, but at the same time, not necessarily. I mean, they both serve different purposes, you know, comic relief, and in the eyes case, you know, another tie-in in this greater universe. But those things are nicely touched on in ways that, and even like there was a throwaway line they said about the, going back to the whitewashing thing, throwaway line they said that Tilda Swinton was like just some Gaelic girl. And I was like, at least they acknowledge the fact that the Ancient One isn't like some ambiguous blah, blah, blah. Like we friggin' know based on her accent, cause she didn't really do any different kind of voice work. Mm-hmm. Like, she, you know, she has a natural accent. So all they have to do, and this is, and going back to Cumberbatch with the accent, which is funny, my wife recently has been on big kick where she gets very frustrated when they don't just let actors use their natural voice. Like, why is it when you're watching these films, unless it's paramount that they be historically accurate or it's paramount to their character, just let them, you know, like all these actors, particularly British actors, that nail it are great. Michael Fassbender, awesome. But then there's other people like Ilsa Fisher and some other people, you're just like, just use your normal accent. You know, it's fine. You don't have to justify it. It's going to shatter the world. And so she was a little taken back by his accent. I thought it was, I really, honestly, I don't really try and force any of those things, so that didn't really like throw me out too much. But at the same time, if he had been British, I don't necessarily think that would have thrown me off either, other than the fact I'm sure just strictly from a comic standpoint, people would have been a little perturbed that
the New Yorker had a British accent. I mean, you can easily spin it in the movies where he grew up in Britain, but he lives in New York, and you know, there's right. like, you know, yeah. medical school took him to the United States after Oxford and all this kind of fancy stuff, you know. And I think a lot of people would just kind of accept it because of we live in an entire culture of Harry Potter, where most of the wizardry in pop culture is British accents or Scottish accents, right?
Like, right, exactly.
So that, I mean, it was not a far stretch to see, and it's same thing with. It's the same reason why elves and fantasy and all that kind of stuff, when I watch a TV show, like the terrible one that I stopped watching and I don't remember the name of, where the elves and all the people have got regular American accents and they talk like they're walking down the streets of LA, and it completely blows the fantasy. Like it does not at all. It shouldn't make a difference, but we live in a world where Tolkien and a lot of these other movies have just put elves and hobbits and all that kind of stuff in a British landscape. You know, it's right. It's old world stuff, and old world was not New York, you know, like,
yeah.
And I think that's where people draw the line. My sister leaned over to me during the movie and laid a little comment on me that stuck with me until the podcast tonight. And that is, when Cumberbatch does an American accent, if you close your eyes, it is uncanny how much he sounds like Harrison Ford.
Interesting. Like,
it's ridiculous. Yeah. Go watch a trailer. I don't even know. I feel like I would have picked it up in the trailer, maybe, because in the trailer it's all one-liners and shouting and, you know, action stuff. But whenever he's just talking to Rachel McAdams in a low voice, like whenever he's trying to convince her to come to some speaking arrangement or just something like that. If you listen, he's got that gravelly deep voice that you like. Obviously, he's always had. He just has a British accent with it. So, but when he puts on the American, man, he sounds like a young Harrison Ford. It's really funny. And once you hear it, you can't unhear it. It's really really fun. I liked what they did with his costume and how the cape came into things and. How, I mean, like, the cape is pretty red, but he's normally in, like, a bright blue suit. But it was a little bit more subdued, a little bit more navy and stuff like that, which they often do, just because it reads better on film. It looks less like a cartoon.
That's film, yeah.
Yeah, but the cape is, like, red. I'm glad that it's not, like, some deep maroon Superman cape. Like, it's a really bright, bright red cape. I got a little tired of the cape jokes. Like, some of it was cool and funny. Okay, the cape's got a mind of its own. That's kind of interesting. It's a little Harry Potter for me, but that's fine. But one or two gags would have been fine. I feel like 6 to 8 was a little bit much. It was a little bit over the top for me. But there were some fun moments, like when he pops the collar. I thought that was
yeah, that was cool. But I mean, that's the only like really really Doctor Strange element that was very kind of like Captain America. Even in the new movies, they just went with the Ultimates version and never brought in, like, they did very briefly a costume with the wing on the ear and the sort of weird scaling on the shoulders and stuff, but they never really totally committed to it. They stuck more with the Ultimates version, which was just sort of like a hyperized combat suit that was done up, and they stuck with that. But the only thing that's very iconic for Doctor Strange that they really didn't do is the capes, like the collar, and how that has those weird impossible hooks that just kind of. But, like, you know, it's a magic floating, like, cape. Like, it still makes sense. But, obviously, I think they probably storyboarded that, you know, and designed it. And it just, they could never get the look they wanted. So, they just went with a flat, sharp collar. That was the only thing that I was like, you know, it would have been interesting to see if for a moment it had curled out. And then he, like, snapped it into place and it went back. You know, because they do that a lot of times with those things where, like, I think it was... what movie was in that were like somebody wore? Well, I mean, like in the first Captain America, they put him in the actual Captain America look so you could see on film, this doesn't work. So we have to change things. And so, you know, those sort of like little nods to being like, look, here's what it would have been like. but we're going to try and make a few changes. You're going to like it. Don't worry. And so it worked out really well. And but the one thing I will say that I don't agree with you on, well, not 100% disagree with you, but I personally found the ending like really exciting and a breath of fresh air, because in a lot of these things, it does come down to the main person pushing past their limits and finally tapping in past, you know, the arrogant side of them to mm-hmm. make a choice for the greater good, which this was. But what I found interesting, and I'm just a sucker for this in general, and, you know, so it's right up my alley, is the idea that this person would literally just sacrifice their own everything and just to prevent the villain from getting what they want. Mm. And it was just, you know, the first time they did it and it worked out, and of course he starts to come back, the audience kind of made like a titter, and the second time people were like laughing, and by the fourth time, and they just kind of go through all the moments, like there was a palpable like element to the theater where people are like, you know, yeah, the same way like if Superman's just like beating down on a bad guy. But the funny part is he's not hurting the bad guy at all. He is just taking it after taking it, and it really just goes to show you like the underdog elements to some of these Marvel characters. Mm. Even though, yes, he's a super awesome, you know, surgeon, yes, he was arrogant, now he's, you know, on the road to the Sorcerer Supreme, but at the same time, like, he's up against unstoppable force, but he will be the rock that does not move. And like, that was just great. And I thought a payoff for, essentially, and I'm a big person who I don't like, you know, I love Superman, but the Superman one time, you know, world spin backwards thing has always bothered me. And mm-hmm. you know, it's been a big joke for decades now that they're like, why doesn't Superman just do that all the time? And it's like, well, probably because they shouldn't have written that in the first place, but forget it. And so, you know, and that's the problem. But I thought for once they sort of earned the time travel element to it, where like, oh, like, because the clever part was he figures out that time doesn't exist there. So he's going to bring time to it. And now, you know, and it's really cool. And Benedict Cumberbatch did the mocap for Dormammu. So like his, like, so that weird, like, the eyes slightly spaced too far apart Dormammu face was Benedict Cumberbatch's facial expressions and stuff. Like, he was hogging out against himself, which, of the ultimate narcissist, you know, in the Marvel universe, of course he's going to fight against himself on screen multiple. But I, you know, that really paid off for me. And I, you know, I was like, oh yeah, that was really cool.
The only thing that gets me, and it's probably just cause I don't feel like I can identify with it, is that I'm not a big fan of these giant godlike bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I mean, I get that Thanos is this all powerful, you know, kind of demigod being, but he's still, I mean, he's 10 feet tall, but he's still a dude that you can see, because in comics they have to draw up something, and usually it's a big muscly looking bad guy to kind of, you know, be the antagonist. But I'm not a fan of like the giant floating head cloud the size of a skyscraper that just kind of is omniscient and purple in this case. It reminded me an awful lot of Parallax from the Green Lantern movie, which I wasn't a fan of either. I understand that it was a setup, but I would much rather see a Sinestro versus Green Lantern than a giant, you know, fear cloud. Like, you know,
sure.
I'd rather it be, sure, he could stand for fear, but I need it to be like a physical manifestation, even if it's all magic. Like, you get kind of heady when you have to say, well, why would he take some sort of human like form if he doesn't have to? It's like, well, he doesn't have to. I get that, but it makes for slightly better drama, a little bit more, you know, easier storytelling. I don't know.
It's
easier for the rest of the world, especially the non-comic, you know, world, to see this purple cloud kind of form itself in the form of, like, for example, you know, they gave, not Ultron, but they gave the AI inside of Loki's staff kind of a new form in the Vision. So mm-hmm. I find Vision much easier to deal with as opposed to like just a talking cloud. Mm-hmm. Right? Like it's a lot easier to kind of like, even though he's a computer, like he's an AI. He's an AI Android. Like he's not, he has those differences. Like you don't mistake him for a person.
Right? Yeah.
So, but that like, and I find that that's all in the acting. So I'm very curious to see where the MCU is going to go with Thanos and like all that kind of stuff, because I mean, he's going to be CG. I mean, he's larger than life, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this all comes together. I was pretty impressed. I was pretty sure when it first glowed, not when they first showed it, but when Strange used it on the apple, they hung on a close-up of the Eye of Agamotto just a little too long, and I thought, oh, it's an Infinity Stone. And that, like, it's...
Yeah.
Once they started talking, once Wong started explaining the multiverse and the different beings and all this kind of stuff, and I thought, oh, okay. Now I kind of see how they're going to tie this all together. And I have to say, like, for a non-mainstream Marvel character, like, when you think about mainstream being, like, Thor, Hulk, Spider-Man, Captain America, I thought they did a really good job of kind of, like, making this his own movie for Strange, tying it in. There was, like, one or two lines about Avengers. Somebody made either an Iron Man or a Captain America joke at some point. And then they just get into the Infinity Stones, much like how Guardians of the Galaxy was its own thing, but then there was an Infinity Stone in that too. And so if you're watching these movies, especially if you're coming to it from really outside the comic world, like my sister is, then you can still get all those things tied together. And it doesn't matter that she doesn't necessarily know what the Infinity Gauntlet is or does, but it, you know, it's that tie-in that makes it all those overlaps really worthwhile. And then you're not surprised when I think Doctor Strange shows up in Thor Ragnarok, right? Like just stuff like that is going to be really cool that it, like, you don't need to have read all the comics or know who appears in what universe and all that kind of stuff to figure it all out. The one thing that, and you might know this, because I haven't had time to look it up. So there's five Infinity Stones, right?
Six, I believe.
Six, okay.
I think there actually is six, because I was trying to go back over it. And the confusing thing is, it's like you think, because the Infinity Gauntlet, so it's like it's a gauntlet, which is essentially a glove, fancy glove. Mm-hmm. And you would think, okay, there's one for each finger, but then there's also one on the back of the palm, I believe.
Right, on the back of the hand, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, I won't say, it's not even really a big thing because technically they sort of get into it with Guardians of the Galaxy, but each one represents sort of a thing a la Captain Planet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're not fire, earth, and water, but like each one represents some part of the Infinity. And what's interesting is trying to go back and remember which one was in what movie. And really and truly, if I'm honest with you, I think I know which one the Doctor Strange one's going to be, and maybe one other. But the rest of them are just ambiguously powerful, which is sort of disappointing because each one is really supposed to be encapsulate like an element. And actually, it is in Civil War directly that they say the yellow Infinity Stone that was in Loki's staff that is now in Vision's head is the Mind Stone.
Right.
So that's what gives Vision so much sentience, so much you know, presence, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
So there's the Mind Stone, and all these other ones have stone names. So,
I think time would probably be the one that Strange has, right?
Yes, I would believe
that. And then what's the purple one from Guardians of the Galaxy? Do we know what that is?
So that one I'm not really sure what that one was supposed to be, because I know for a fact that the Infinity Stones are I knew there was going to be mind, power. There's always a power, time, and then like reality. But I always blank on the other ones. Okay. So soul and space. So it's mind, soul, power, space, time, and reality. Hmm. And so if you extrapolate from that, I would imagine that I think power is a red stone. So that would be from Thor, the Dark World, because that was like a red, like, googly thing.
So we did see the red one at one point.
I guess, because although the blue one was a cube, and I know that's called the Tesseract because it was also like it's a cosmic cube essentially is what it was called.
Right.
And it was another thing, and I don't even know if the cosmic cube was supposed to be an Infinity Stone, but maybe they just said, let's just smash all these Mythos things together.
Yeah.
So
it makes sense.
But that one, you know, Red Skull used to just essentially power a whole bunch of stuff, the blast stuff. So again, that also feels power-like, but I know power is red, so I would imagine it's not that. So that's what's so weird is, like, other than the Mind Stone and the Time, which are pretty well-defined here, the Guardians ones to me, I don't know, space maybe? Because that's a space movie?
That could be, yeah. No, yeah,
maybe.
Yeah,
because
that was what was that in? Was it a hammer? No,
it was. He puts it in the hammer. It was originally in like that little sphere thing that they stole.
Right,
but it was just contained. Is all it was really.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah,
cool. I'm excited to see where everything goes. I'm certainly excited to see the next Thor movie. They had a fun little thing after the credits at the end of Strange Adventures, Doctor Strange. So if you're watching the movie, stay past the animated credits. I don't think there's anything after the scrolling ones, but it was a fun little exchange between Thor and Doctor Strange that I liked.
Oh, there is a post credit.
Is there really? My sister and I were just like, no, we're not staying through all of this.
It's nothing much. I mean, it would literally do almost nothing for you. I have a really good joke about it if you do see it, but it ties into a Judah 4 involvement, but who, by the way, we didn't even mention, but I thought he did fine in the film. He's sort of, you know, it's cool that another one of these great actors is showing up in these movies, but he was kind of just there to be sort of semi bestie mentor, but really he just was there to be sort of frowny man, like, you know, to all of Benedict Cumberbatch's like arrogance and whimsy. So I don't know, again, I know too much from the comics, so sometimes some characters I'm just like, you know, like Flash now has become somewhat so obscure that I don't know things, so then I look up everybody's name, which we shouldn't do.
Yeah,
I'm just like, that's a weird name, are you important? And then sure enough, you know.
Yeah,
but you're right, the first of the post credits one is really fun, and talk about humor and just like a really great, like, those are the things that is amazing that they made these movies and they function simply for moments that are essentially like 2 to 3 minutes but are so like, I just want to shoot like a little video of all the like small bits, because half the time those are the funniest. Like, those are the things that catch you off guard, is the shawarma and the, like, you know.
Yeah.
All these like little things, these little moments that, you know, are just completely like fan service. But you can tell the actors like just chew it up, you know. Nobody's, other than the weird one that was for Thor after Thor Dark World, that was obviously shot very badly. Other than that garbage one, all of them have been really, really exciting.
Yeah, no, I agree. I always like watching the ones after the animated credits. It's like, I always find that there's something there. But I've been burned before where you stay for the whole credits and you're on your phone or you're doing whatever. And often it's late and you're just like, I just want to go home. But, you know, and then you're just like, oh, and then nothing happens. Because, like, well, geez.
Yeah.
You know, like, so then I was like, well, I figured if it was that important, that I probably can catch it online somewhere. I guess my only final thought on Doctor Strange. First, I think people should go see it. I really think it's best seen in theaters. I think supporting with your money films like this just mean that more side characters and stuff get into the MCU, and it's cool because I think there's less pressure and I think they can have a little bit more fun with it. The thing that I was pleasantly surprised by, but shouldn't have been, was how casual and fun the relationship with Rachel McAdams was in the movie. My dad is always getting up about the TV shows where everybody knows who Oliver is in Arrow and Flash, and like there's teams of like 6 to 8 people in these superhero caves, and like yeah, everybody exactly. knows the secret identity, and he's just like I don't understand it. I mean I understand that like in a world of cell phones and satellite, you know, GPS and all this kind of stuff, like you know, it wouldn't be super hard to figure out who Batman is, sort of thing.
Right.
So I understand that angle to it, but there's something really fun about something you and I have talked about, which is the Clark Kent kind of disguise thing. But they don't even address it in Strange. Like there's not even a moment like in Iron Man where he decides to tell people. He just says, "I got stabbed. I need you to help me. By the way, I'm magic. Hi." And it's just like, it's just accept it. I have, and there's no hiding.
Right.
There's nothing. And she's like, "Okay, well, you're on the table, bleeding, and you're floating. So I'm going to do what I know how to do, and you're still floating." Like, there's just this complete, yep. like, the way that they handle all that is really cool. I think there was a moment in the trailer, it was when he's talking about, like, so I have to go back to Greenwich Village through the space portal that's in the broom closet. And she's like, "Fine, don't tell me where you're going. Like, really."
Yeah.
And he just kind of opens the broom closet, and there's the spinning portal, right? And he's kind of like, I love it when they just don't hide anything. It's just like,
yeah,
you know, the shtick of like, I have to find a way to leave the room to change into my super suit so I can save the day does get a little bit old sometimes. And I kind of like it when they're just kind of like, nope, I'm in a floating red cape. Hi. You know, yeah. It's like, sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just, it takes that. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. So yeah, I would definitely go see it. And that's the thing I like. It's fun. There's dark stuff happening. There's murder and fighting, and the world is in peril. But it's a fun movie.
Yeah, exactly. No, they do a great job with all that, and I think yet again, they've shown that they have an aptitude for casting, and in a lot of ways, you know, directing obviously, but then the writing and the production is all there, and each and every one they really invest in. And what's fun is, unlike Black Panther, which we're going to see, I believe, next, unless it got flipped with Captain Marvel, which it might have. But Black Panther, we at least were introduced in Civil War. But Doctor Strange is a wholly by himself thing, the same way Ant-Man was before he came into Civil War. And in the same way Captain Marvel most likely is going to be when she shows up. And what's interesting is when the characters come in with a running start, or when they come in just absolutely fresh and by themselves. So it's really interesting.
Yeah. I don't want necessarily an origin film for Black Panther. I want them to hit that movie ground running. Like just start super suit. You know, have him do Black Panther stuff minute one. Like, I don't need to know an origin. Or if I do, it's going to be over dinner, like a conversation. Don't show me a flashback to when he was a kid or first doing the thing or stuff like that. Like, just if you do that, make it very, very short. Because it doesn't really matter at this point. We all kind of know who he is, where he's from, pretty much what he stands for. I would just like to see more of it. I'd like to explore that universe at a fast pace. I don't need to slow it down and have like an origin thing going on. But we were going to talk about Westworld and potentially even The Crown, but we were out of time. So we're going to have to postpone that to later on in the month. But I would say watch both as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure you probably have the same feeling about Westworld.
That's right. Yeah, I look forward to seeing that you've talked to somebody else about Sweet Sweet Westworld and how awesome it is. It's so good.
I think it's gonna be. I'm actually not caught up, so it's kind of good that we didn't talk about it this week, because we'd have to figure out like where I am and all that kind of stuff, because it's been a couple of weeks since I've watched it, so I'm a bit behind. So I'm hoping to catch up over this weekend actually. So that moves us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by Patreon over at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. If you enjoy what we have been saying, then pop on over there and possibly support the show a little bit. It's always fun to see everybody in the Slack chat. It's one of the cool things about being a patron. Lots of cool stuff happening there. Had a chance to actually hang out with a couple of Slack people. Obviously, Sam was at HalCon this weekend. Alistair was at HalCon this weekend. Mike O'Day was with me at HalCon this weekend. So it's becoming a fun little community. So check out patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to support the show and join in the fun. My internet pick this week is pretty quick. Her name is Lindsay McMullen. She's on Instagram. She's a photographer and a graphic designer. Super talented and just In a world where things seem to be a little upside down this week, she makes really pretty things. The pieces that she puts, whether it's a photo, a space that she has designed, a vent, or an image and illustration, they're all just really serene. So if you need a really cool window into mostly Halifax and Nova Scotia, if I'm not mistaken, because she is local. She does travel a little bit. I think I saw some New York pictures in her feed. But check out Lindsay McMullen, McMullen on Instagram. She's got some really, really cool stuff. That brings us to the end. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am doing online at joelduggan.com. This has been the Citadel Cafe. Twitter, Facebook, we're all over the place. iTunes reviews. It's all really fancy places to leave reviews, leave us notes, reach out on social media, whatever you like. Brockett, where can people find you online?
Well, you can just check out Biggest Fan Podcast. Check that out, and also check out Candy of This Day, hashtag Candy of This Day. Recently did the month of October with a different candy every day on Instagram and Facebook. And that was a lot of fun. And I'm considering whether or not I'm going to try and do, probably won't be every day, but I might do a couple weekly updates in December if I can get my hands on some more holiday specific ones and branch out perhaps and look at even, I don't really think Valentine's even brings in new flavors. But Easter certainly does. So Easter and Christmas, holidays and that sort of thing. So yeah, that's genius. Check out those things.
You could broaden things with, you could do like sweet of this day for Christmas. Like it wouldn't have to be candy. You could do like cookies or cake or
I guess that's cake. True, but it's a slippery slope, Joel. That's like what kind of cakes are you gonna do? Cakes that I mean, already people think I'm diabetic because of candy. Can you imagine people think I'm diabetic and a freaking lub-tard, like a tub of lard. I flipped it, like of just like ooze of eating this cake. I mean, not to say, you know, people who eat cake are lub-tards, but I'm just saying, if I ate a cake every day, I would not be in a good physical condition, no matter what I'm doing. So
I feel like that would have to be a team effort. Like you'd have to sit down with a piece of cake and split it with Laura, right, and just.
Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah.
I could split it with my wife, but still, two cozy little tubs of lard oozing in the bed every night.
Hey, it's wintertime. You got to stay warm, right?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, man. Too funny. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.